Ready for the show?
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engines running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11. Tower cleared.
Intelligence reaching for the stars.
My fellow listeners, now I present to you E.T. First Contact Radio, starring our wonderful host, Martin Horst.
Yes, my friends all over the world, welcome to E.T. First Contact Radio. Now, we have a revolutionary broadcast. This is amazing. We are live streaming from my YouTube account. We are broadcasting on BBS Radio in California, Revolution Radio in the States, broadcasting all over the world, Finding Voices Radio, with many listeners all over. So on four different networks, we are bringing this baby live. This is a revolutionary idea to combine radio stations. And Michael is with me and Paula is with me. Paula is our guest and Michael is co-hosting the show tonight. And Michael is connected to Debbie West from Revolution Radio. So welcome, Michael. And welcome, Paula. So we are going to read the wonderful career that Paula has done in her life. Paula Leo Pizzi Harris is an Italo-American photojournalist and investigative reporter in the field of extraterrestrial-related phenomena research. She is also a widely published freelance writer, especially in Europe. She has studied extraterrestrial-related phenomena since 1979, and is on a personal terms with many of the leading researchers in the field. From 1980 to 1986, she has assisted Dr. J. Allen Hynek with his UFO investigations and has interviewed many top military witnesses concerning their involvement in the government truth embargo. In 1997, Mrs. Harris met and interviewed Colonel Phillips Roswell. And New Mexico, and became a personal friend and confidant. She was instrumental in having his book, The Day After Roswell, for which she wrote the preface translated into Italian. She returned to Roswell in the summer of 2003 for the American debut of her book, New Revised Connecting the Dots, Making Sense of the UFO Phenomena. She has since written four other books, all historical interviews with important whistleblowers. Paula travels to Rome and currently to Latin America, but lives in Boulder, Colorado. She has a master's degree in education. She teaches history and photojournalism and online classes in exopolitics for Dr. Michael Sala, Exopolitics Institute, for which she is an international liaison director. So, without further ado, I want to heartily welcome you again to the program, dear Paula.
Thank you, Martin, and hello, Michael. So I'm speaking to two people. This is revolutionary.
It is, and we are broadcasting on four networks, YouTube, BBS Finding Voices and Revolution Radio. So we are having a great audience from all over the world. Welcome everybody. This is an amazing broadcast and it's amazing that it's working. So Paula, my dear friend, I just want to stand still for a moment, and because the soul of our dear brother and friend and light worker and truth seeker, Eckhart Mitchell, has passed over. So I want to send blessings and love to his soul and his family, because he transitioned to the other realm. And I want to stand still by his loving contribution and his amazing contribution to the truth seekers in the world that have learned so much from him. So let's thank him for what he did to humankind, okay?
Absolutely, and he was a very close friend of mine, and I did an interview with him in 2004 in Roswell, because I don't know if you know, but Dr. Mitchell was born in Roswell, New Mexico, and Edgar Mitchell was part of Apollo 14. He was the sixth man to walk on the moon, and when I met him, he talked to me about his interest in ESP, his interests in quantum physics, his interests in science explaining the paranormal. And I don't know if you know this, Martin, but the thing is that he basically did some experiments from the moon. He did a lot of ESP experiments, and he told me they were 90% effective, which means that you can project thoughts from the moon. And the implications of that are astronomical.
Yes, indeed. And he has contributed to so many wonderful insights. And I remember I read an interview from him, that feeling that when he looked down at the Earth, when he walked on the moon, was just like the Sanskrit word they have in India. It was like a feeling of bliss. You remember that he said that?
Yeah, actually, his book talks about that. His book is called The Way of the Explorer, and I had it translated into Italian because it was so amazing. It was an epiphany he had. It was an experience. He felt one with the universe, and it's called samadhi in the Indian text.
Samadhi,
but
that's
he felt
the word.
One.
Yes.
Yeah, he felt the oneness of everything, like all the molecules in him were the same, and the stars, and he was the same. And hopefully that's what you feel also when you pass over.
I believe so, yes. I believe then you are back in the... Because Wu says that heaven, the heavenly realms, it's how we call them, the other dimensions, I believe the ETs are friends from the space. Somehow the universe is relating the realms of the metaphysical, the higher dimensions, which in religions we call Bible or Nirvana or heaven. I believe this is the realm where we will travel after we pass our physical body, after we transition to the other realms. Now, what's your idea about it, Michael?
Well, I was just going to ask, may I also follow up one of these questions on the thought that Mitchell was able to send? How was it received?
Well, in those days, and we're talking at least 20 years ago, they used to do experiments with cards, and they used to concentrate on an image, and then the image, then the other person, the receiver, would receive the image. So what he did, and NASA didn't know about this, they weren't too happy about it either, but what he did was at certain times of the day, he knew they were receptive in Florida, his group, which later became IONS, because he's the one that developed the IONS group. He would concentrate on certain images, and then they would, you know, get the image. And there were only, in those days, there were only, you know, triangles, circles, rectangles, star. There were only a certain number of images. And the reason why that he wanted to do it that way was and that's how they tested everybody for ESP in the older days at Stanford Research Institute.
I have some of those cards, I think.
They
I
what?
Have some of those cards. I say I have some of those cards. I know what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
you probably, because those were the old days. I call them the olden days. The way they did that is to see what the accuracy was. It seemed like it was guessing, but it's not really guessing because the sender is sending. And I remember Edgar told me that it was, when he found out that it was 90% effective, then he began to look at the quantum reason for that. And, of course, it's non-locality, which they call entanglement today, when one molecule, you know, affects another one.
And was it instantaneous?
Yeah, it's instantaneous. I mean, there is no time. I mean, they received it. And when he got back, I mean, I don't know if you know this, but I know both of them, but when he got back, he got money from the CIA to bring Uri Geller to Stanford Research Institute. And I know Uri very well. He's the Israeli psychic, you know, that can bend spoons and start clocks, watches, and stuff like that. And yeah. He had him tested by Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff. And I began looking at this, you know, and I know Uri. I talked to Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff, and I said, did you guys really, you know, study ESP like this and have Uri do all these amazing things? And Edgar Mitchell paid for it with the money from the CIA because he was interested in this, because the implications of not only ESP but of non-locality, the fact that we have these senses that are one with the universe, that we can do these things, are amazing. And I like to think they're amazing because you can find your car keys, because you can understand somebody else. But in those days, it was used for psychic spying. So it was used for military purposes.
So if I can just enlarge that thought a bit on this instantaneous communication through thought energy, how does this relate possibly to space travel?
Well, I was hoping you'd ask me, how does it relate to ETs?
Well, that would be the same thing, yes.
I know, because the truth is that all the contactees that I've talked to all over the world, and you've got to understand, I'm an international person. I don't just work in the United States. I work and now in Latin America, but I used to live in Rome. I just came back to the United States in 2007. I used to live in Italy. But what that does is I'm getting these this testimony that when you communicate with an ET in whatever language it is, remember they can't go to school in all these languages, that it's a direct thought transfer. So that means you get it as they send it in whatever language you're in, you know, whatever language you speak. So, I, you know, more like that I think about it than I do space travel per se, because space travel per se has the connotation of some kind of, you know, technology, and that's a whole other world.
But when we were just Spirit Farm, we traveled that way, right?
When we were just where?
Spirit Farm. When we had no physical form or soul travel.
Well, that's, you know, some people believe that. I haven't done any studies in that, so I don't know what to say.
Okay, so, well, I'm getting off the track, of course, but anyways, this is fascinating. Martin, where were we going before I got all confused?
Well, the beautiful thing is that I have a strong feeling, and what I want to share with the listeners, I believe life is eternal. We are eternal beings. Living a physical experience, we are spiritual beings living a physical experience. And the beautiful thing, what I understand from ET technology, channelings, and from contactees, Paula also, is that we are now reaching a point where we will ascend with our spiritual, with our physical bodies, and become fully galactic beings. That's the purpose of first contact that will happen in our lifetimes, I believe. So, Paula, you must also have this conclusion with all the contactees that you interviewed, especially in South America and Central America and Latin America. And those people are speaking about, and those contactees are speaking about, the spiritual importance and the spiritual awakening of humankind regarding the reason they make contact with us. It's to lift us up to a higher state of vibration, a higher state of consciousness and love. Isn't that true, Paula?
Yeah, but the whole UFO field is very complicated. You'd have to go to all different kinds of contact before I reach that point. You have to understand that the UFO field is very mixed. In the United States of America, and I'm going to talk internationally, in the United States of America, every UFO conference is all about abductions and little gray aliens running around and that kind of thing. And you have to, because I knew Colonel Philip Corso, who wrote the book The Day After Roswell, and who was involved in the Pentagon in the 1960s with back engineering, he's the one that explained to me that they had the autopsies of the beings, and they were clones. In other words, those beings were little workers that had microchips in their brain, and they were not the actual ETs. But in America, that's what everybody thinks an ET is. Because I was in Italy, and because I've studied the cases of Adamski, the early days of the 1950s, at Giant Rock, Van Tassel, Howard Menger, the early days of contact in America were human people that came from other planets to tell us to stop using the atomic bomb or we would do ourselves in. But that's been canceled out of the UFO lore now in the United States. So in Italy in 1960, we had Eugenio Siracusa, who met with long blonde-haired people. And by the way, long blonde-haired people are not all Pleiadians. They said they came from Venus. And we had the same thing that Adamski experienced in California, in Italy. And the message was the same. People grow up, stop using these weapons because, number one, you're going to destroy yourselves, and number two, you'll never be able to come out and meet us because you're spending all your money on war. You're not spending any money on space travel. And then I went to Latin America and met with Sisto Paz Wells and Ricardo Gonzalez and Luis Fernando, and today, in this day and age, they're having contact with human-type beings that are coming off ships and giving them the same kind of message, but are also telling them that we have wasted a lot of time and not gotten to the point of higher consciousness. And to do that, you almost have to do away with any kind of conflict or boundaries or borders. And it gets very complicated. It's not an easy task.
No, but I think that the overall consciousness of the people on the planet, on the surface, the governments leave them beside with their warmongering and the banks that are stealing our money. I'm talking about the general population. I think many people are waking up in a fast rate right now. And not only waking up, but also growing in their level of consciousness and their ability to love and to forgive each other. Because that's the prerequisite for first contact. Now, Star Trek talks about the Prime Directive. The Prime Directive gives a set of rules, a set of needs where a civilization needs to be ready for contact. And of course, our governments do not meet with those requests, but I believe the world population has reached the 51% that are asking for intervention and are asking for the Galactics to help us and to be here to create a better world, the world that we all dream of, the Golden Age, right?
Yeah, I'd like to believe that is the way it is, but here most people are interested in the Super Bowl, okay? I'm being very blunt here. There are very few people that want to have this conversation. And I do it as a journalist because I'm trying, like Edgar Mitchell, who was trying to use science to explain metaphysics, I'm using my career in journalism to say there's another truth and explain what you believe to be the case, Martin. But it's a hard road because people are more interested, I think, in their everyday lives and the fact that they have to make a living, that they're being taxed, that things aren't the way they are. And then there's another distraction, Martin, which is terrible, and that is that they're on their cell phones all the time and they don't meditate. Most of the people I interviewed in Latin America said that their contacts came from meditating at least an hour a day and making their minds be receptive But, you know, I live in a society here where nobody's, you know, everybody's on their cell phones, including kids. And I don't know how they're leaving space in their minds to be contacted or elevated or learn anything. And I'm hoping that's not going to happen forever, but that is the case that I see. I don't know, Michael, do you think it's the same way, or do you see people evolving?
The metaphysical field is prime interest to me, and I'm fortunate. I have 150 acres, so I get up on the mountain, and I can feel that connection to the whole cosmos. So I deal with a lot of people that I see, you know, once a week in a discussion group that have the interest in connecting to the spiritual field, and I totally agree with you in that terms of connecting to what I call a core of the universe, which in my mind is love. In other words, the cosmos. If I'm connected to that divine love, through that comes the messages, the inspiration, the guidance to whatever it is that I'm supposed to do next. At least that's my intention.
Well, let me add something. I'm trying to make something happen because I can be a journalist, but it doesn't really do a lot as far as changing the world. So I have brought back Laughlin, Nevada as a kind of conference where we not only discuss UFOs, but I bring in people to talk about higher consciousness, like Essen Sekerara from Denmark, who's absolutely amazing. And she's a former UFO investigator from Turkey, but she's also shifted into consciousness studies, as has Grant Cameron from Manitoba. He's shifted into consciousness. I mean, all of the journalists, all the researchers that I know that started with nuts and bolts have gone to the bottom line, which is consciousness, raising of higher consciousness. So in November of this year, 13, 14, and 15, I'm bringing together seven international speakers, plus Dr. Stephen Greer, plus Jaime Maussan from Mexico, Essen Sekerara, Karen Ogg from Australia, and Ricardo Gonzalez and Sol Sanfelice from Argentina. Ricardo Gonzalez has contact with human-type beings from the planet Apu that have given very, very specific messages. It's on my Facebook. People can go and look. But he basically does a lot of meditation. He does his conferences in Shasta, Mount Shasta. And there's 3 days of very little eating because fasting and camping, and you were talking about the land that you live on, Michael, it's very important to be under the stars, to be concentrated on this. And whatever, just like Edgar Mitchell made something happen from the moon, when people get together and have the same thoughts and have the same feelings and have the same mostly intentions, especially intentions towards peace, something does happen. It is an action, and that interests me the most as a journalist. And in November, I'm bringing all these people together for the third time in Laughlin, Nevada.
That is fantastic. One of the things that I try to sneak in as a question on Deb's show is, well, what is the order of the universe? What is there? And people come back to that love, and it seems to me from all the different people that we've talked to that they're finding places somewhere around the globe where they're all reflecting this. And that, to me, is the greatest hope, that sense of knowing that there are people consciously or unconsciously being involved in this incredible project. I call us a transition team. In other words, we're all here for a purpose.
Yeah, for me, I want you to know, Martin and Michael, this is not entertainment. This is work. And basically, when I interviewed Enrique Villanova, he put it very clearly. I said, why are we all over the place? And he said, we're like acupuncture needles. And that was such a great metaphor. We're acupuncture needles all over the earth trying to cause change. I agree with you 100%. This is like the most important story for mankind. It's more important than anything else because it will evolve mankind to another level, and a level where we can have contact, where people want to talk to us, where, you know, we can have some kind of, you know, a communication. Because there are people out there that, in the universe, that know a lot more than we do. And we can't wait for NASA to bring us to the moon or Mars or someplace else before that happens, because these people are coming here.
I agree. Martin, what do you think?
Well, I think there's a... I believe we don't have much time left. The people in government need to understand, or they will be arrested, I'm sure, because the event is right in front of the door. There's a reason for the things that are happening now, the stock markets that are crashing, because there are a few countries in the world, like the BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They want this change. They want this change to happen so that we can have prosperity, because we are living on a debt system since a long time, and forces that have controlled us, they need to step down. I believe it's really, we are overdue. We really need to make this change happen right now. And then I saw a video today, earlier on, I will show it to you. You should watch this, it's on my Facebook. And that says that the event is imminent. I will just look it up. It's very important to know that, because once the event happens, we'll have disclosure from the ETs themselves, Paula, and they will say, okay, you need to become peaceful and you need to live together in harmony. Right, worldwide reset imminent. You have to find this video. It's on prepareforchange.net. It's a very good website. It combines the intel from Cobra and others, and this is from Fast Sirius, and I'm very much connected to the Syrians, Paula. But I believe this is the time we need, as a whole planet, as humanity, as a world, to stand up for truth and love, and to get together in this love and make this change possible, because it's time. It's time. We are overdue, I believe.
Well, what you're talking about is the geopolitical situation, and you know, so few researchers really look at the geopolitical situation. They're looking at that all different kinds of, you know, and it's important not to get buried in conspiracy theory, because that lowers the vibration. And the vibration, you might as well go out and commit suicide if you listen to some of these people. You know, it's, we know the world is like that. And the answer is, we know the world is like that. We know what we have. What do you want to do about it? And if something needs to be done, and if you do it on a esoteric level, if you do it on a meditation level, if you do it on some kind of level that really makes a difference. And I'm going back to Edgar Mitchell, because if thoughts are powerful, and if thoughts can heal, and if prayer can heal, and everything, and we have this sub level of atomic action, this quantum level. If that is really powerful, that's the only level that we could work on right now. People getting together in groups, like you mentioned, Michael, and all the acupuncture needles all over the world, like groups that are involved with peace, and they're all over the world. Then yes. The shift has to happen. I mean, there's no choice. The only constant is change. It's going to change. There's no way that we can keep going like this.
And acupuncture is my primary form of health care, so I can really relate to what you're saying.
Well, you remember that metaphor. It wasn't mine. It was Enrique Villanova's from Peru. He's the one that mentioned it, so it isn't my invention. But when he said that, it made so much sense. And, you know, you can become an acupuncture needle. I mean, people can do that. They can make a difference. And you know, science is trying to explain it. That's why I love Edgar Mitchell's work in ions. You know, Dean Radin, who's talking about quantum, the non-locality in quantum physics. They were trying with science to explain a phenomenon that exists. Because, you know, our scientists think this is all New Age. It's not New Age. It's the way the world works. It's the way cosmos works. It's a new science.
Yeah, this is the reality we are talking about, because we are not living in the Matrix. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, I'm a conspiracy realist. And I want to say just that how important it is to formulate positive thoughts, positive actions, and positive things that you are saying to your neighbors, to people on the street, also to your own community of truth seekers on the internet, wherever they are. We are all connected, and we are making this change together by having positive intent, Paula. Right?
Well, you just use the secret word. It's the intention. It's the intention.
Yes.
That's what makes things different. If you have an intention and you get together with a bunch of people, you're more powerful than any war, tool. If you have intention, if the people have an intention, it's going to happen. And unfortunately, we have people who have negative intentions, too, you know, because there's a balance. But in my work as a journalist, and I can only speak from nuts and bolts work that I've done, because it's not just theory. I mean, I travel all over the world and interview people and find out, you know, what they were involved in and, you know, find out. Most of these people have come to the conclusion that, you know, the only answer is that we get together as one in peace. And, you know, from space, the world does not show any borders. And yet people are fighting about the border between Mexico and America, the border between all countries. The ETs see us as human species, as human beings, as looking like human beings. I don't think they see us as individual nationalities. I don't think they see us as individual countries. I mean, if you go to Venus, what you look at piece of Venus, who's fighting with another piece of Venus. You know, we're on a very, very, very primitive timeline, and I think that the extraterrestrials want us to grow up. And you're absolutely right about it has to be fast, because we've wasted a lot of time. We can't make Russia the enemy and return to the 1960s. We cannot go backwards. We have to go forwards. And it's going to be interesting this year because we have an election. It's going to be interesting to see what the geopolitics is, because that's all part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you see the developments, what's happening geopolitically, if I may say, the United States and Europe are messing up Syria, including Saudi Arabia, creating ISIS, creating all kinds of conflicts, and then blaming Russia. But Russia is wise enough not to go further in this conflict. And it's, by the way, it's a very good idea if you want to look real news to look Russia today, because they have a complete different version of reality that's happening not only in the Middle East, but on the global scale. And because the mainstream media is still controlled. But Paula, do you also believe that the ETs will take over the media and announce themselves to humanity?
No, I don't believe that. That would just be the taking over by a greater power, and that we don't need an invasion. Besides, which ETs? We have 57 different groups visiting us right now. Which ones would you want to do that? I think the ETs, we can't use a collective group. When I mentioned Apu, you don't. Neither one of you, I think, have studied or the world knows about the Apunians. They have come to Peru and they are in the constellation of Alpha Centauri. What's happened with ETs is we've split them off into reptilians, greys, and Pleiadians, which is crazy because there's all kinds of visitations from all kinds of planets. In Italy alone, we have all kinds of contactees that have told us that there's, and you mentioned Syrians, people from Sirius, people from Andromeda, people from all over. So which ones are going to go on television? I don't think that's going to happen. I think that what's going to happen is that the new generation, Martin, the new one, the children, the new generation will come about, and they'll be a lot wiser in handling things, and they will not have all the hang-ups we had, and that generation is the Star Trek generation. And if you go to Star Trek conferences, my God, there's over 4,000 people in a Star Trek conference or Star Wars conference. And if you go to a UFO conference, there's only 200 people. Now explain that.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm talking about Galactic Federation of Worlds. So you talk about Sirians, Pleiadians, Andromedans, Insectoids, Greys, all groups together forming an alliance as benevolent ETs that...
But we don't know that. I mean, in my research, I don't know that. That's part of a mythology that I really, you know, we could put that together, but I never heard of that. And none of the people, I think there's a federation. I do believe it, but we don't know who's in it because there's planets in there that we've never even heard of. And stars, I'm just studying the Latin Americans, the ones from Apu. Those people are 10 feet tall. They're the giants. And yet we had on the island of Sardinia almost 10 to 15 feet tall people back in the old days. And we have their tombs. We have their bones. So I'm wondering, this is a lot more complex than we think it is. This is a lot more complicated than we believe it is. So I can't just say this is going to happen. It's going to happen like this because I think it's a study. And I think it takes years to look at all the research. I think it takes a lot of time to, and I don't think they're going to come on television and do anything. I, you know, the thing is that somebody suggested, what if they come over every major airport at the same time? And that looks like an invasion. I don't think they're going to do that. That would look like an invasion. I know for a fact that Beijing Airport was closed twice this year because of UFOs. And Bremen Airport in Germany was closed once because of UFOs. So UFOs, are they coming here and appearing over airports? Yeah, they're just coming here, I think, and saying, you better get your act together because you people may destroy yourselves, but I don't think that they're going to be the ones to intervene.
But I'm sure that they're stepping up their activity because they promised that, and you can see that the UFO sightings from February this month. And the first month of this year, the UFO activity has stepped up enormously. If you look at the sightings, there are YouTube channels that are combining all the reports about those sightings, and they're really stepping up now. What do you think, Michael?
Is there, you know what I was going to ask you? Italy has a site on the Air Force, on their Air Force website, where they have UFO sightings. Do you know of any place we can look in Europe to see where the sightings are?
In Europe?
Yeah, just in Europe, because MUFON has it here in America. MUFON has a map with the sightings. I was wondering, how can you see anything in Europe? I mean, is there, like, anything you know about where we can go and look?
Well, people are going out every month with New Moon, and that's the initiative from Dr. Stephen Gree from the CE5 initiative. So we have people coming out in several groups worldwide, but there's no centralized organization in Europe that covers all these sightings together. No, we don't have that.
Well, Stephen Greer's group, and I'm involved with the CSETI group, and actually in my books I said that's the only protocols I really think are logical to use, they are actually asking them to come. And when groups get all over the world that you practice the CSETI protocols, they do get sightings. I mean, they do, because it's done with meditation, it's done with spirituality, it has a certain protocol. So I do recommend those.
Of course, New Hampshire has a rich history dating back 50 plus years or more. And it's really interesting. There are places here that there's one mountain in particular where there's a lot of lights. In fact, I learned the other day that lots of times it's a training place for the Air Force, Navy planes, because they can encounter unknown there. So it helps them in their training. It's fascinating to see. Do you think the Earth itself is alive?
I do. I think the Earth is alive. And then some of the interviews I did, like Dr. Michael Wolf Cravant, he told me, and then David Adair, I didn't do that interview, but I read that the craft is alive, the UFO is alive. it's a biological UFO, some of these craft. They're not metal.
Yes.
I mean, they're alive. And there's an interaction between the pilot and the craft mentally. I mean, the pilot can actually drive the craft with his mind. And so, I think everything is alive, I believe. But you have to have that view. You have to understand that, which for a lot of people, it's really difficult to understand.
Well, yeah, I saw an episode from Star Trek The Next Generation just 2 days ago. I'm watching season 3 now in full HD, high quality. There was an episode with an organic being floating through space, millions years old, and it was an organic spaceship. It's wonderful that this is also displayed in Star Trek. Even this was produced in the 1990s, Paula.
Yeah, and I think that is part of the... Some of these craft are organic craft. And that's the difference. What, you know, whatever we took from crashes and everything else, we can't make them work because we don't have the capacity to interact with them. And that's very frustrating for the people that are doing back engineering. You know, so it gets really complicated. This field is extremely complex.
Yeah, there are more species out there than we can even imagine with our fantasy. I think anything that we can create in our fantasy must exist somewhere out there, right?
Well, that, I love that idea. That's I agree with you. I agree with you. Not only that, but we can't look at the study of this phenomenon as happening, you know, since Roswell. It's ancient aliens. It's the Egyptians. It's back in the old days. It's the lines of Nazca. It's the Aztecs, the Mayans. You know, way back when. So I think whatever is interacting with this planet interacted with it for hundreds and thousands of years.
Do you think there are grids around the globe where energy can flow? Almost like the lines, they call them, or whatever. In other words,
yeah, the grids. A lot of the interviews I've done, the ETs have told people that they actually travel with along the magnetic grids. There's grids around the Earth, and if something interrupts them, that's when they have the accident. You know, where they can't navigate the grid, the electric grid, and that's when they. Because one of the questions everybody asks is if they're so advanced, how come, you know, they crash? Well, in New Mexico, there's a lot of electrical interaction because they have terrible, terrible thunderstorms. And so I can see where that would happen there. But we've had quite a few crashes all over the world in different countries, including Brazil, the Virginia case. And something happens where it interferes with the navigational system.
Sort of like the bumblebees or the some of them with the cell phones now, or you know, the some of the insects getting confused.
Well, I can see that happening. Yeah. It's so complex. We have different networks now with the not only cell phones, but we're in the future. It's going to even get more complicated, I think.
And. Can I just go back to one thing? I wanted to get it out. Are you familiar with what we call hot math?
No.
Okay. They've scientifically proved that the heart puts out 60 times more energy than the brain. So this concept of thought-based, if one starts out with gratitude and you feel something you're grateful for in your heart, when you project that thought out, you've actually given it a lot more power, a lot more intensity. So when people are working with that sense of love and peace, when they feel that, that itself is, I think, helping to broadcast to enable that, the what you'd call the acupuncture points around the world.
Yeah, and I have a story for you you're going to love, Michael. When I did the conference this year in Laughlin, Nevada, I had a lot of Hispanics there, and I had Luis Fernando from Bolivia, and I said, this conference is dedicated to the heart because that is the only connection you can even have with an ET. You certainly can't have a brain connection. They're a lot more evolved than you are, so the only thing you can have is a heart connection. And the Latin Americans understand this. And people photographed at night a big heart over the hotel. And a Latin American lady during the day took a movie of a heart floating around the hotel in the sky. So my thought was, it wasn't a heart. They were three orbs. They probably were craft. It's a possibility they were craft that formed a heart. But you're absolutely right about the heart connection. It is the strongest point. It is the thing that makes things happen. And it is the only connection we can all have because we're all coming from different places.
It's the most important connection.
Well, it's powerful. To think that we can process everything through the brain, I think, is not logical because we're all on different levels. And to think you have the same brain as an ET, an extraterrestrial, what you have is consciousness. He's alive and you're alive. You have consciousness. You're part of one. You're part of the universe. That's the only thing you have in common. I mean, he didn't go to school. He didn't have parents. He didn't do the things. He's traveling through the universe. Some of them are interdimensional. Besides being interplanetary, and you don't, the only thing you will have in common is that heart connection or that, and in the basic, you know, I think that even Edgar Mitchell said that the God or the force is basically love. That's the only thing that can unify it. It's the unifier of everything. It's the glue. It's the unifier. And I think when people reach that conclusion, I think that we'll have a different, we'll have a shift in evolution.
Yeah, the heart is very connected to our consciousness. Yes, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, what came to me a few years ago, I'll share, is that something pushed my button a bit, and all of a sudden I heard "I am love," and I heard it like repeated three times. "I am loved," and I repeat that three times, and "I am your love," meaning I am that love. It reflects in and it reflects through me and out. And so I say that to myself many times a day as an anchor to keep me connected into that unconditional love through intentions.
Well, I think that's the only thing that really makes a difference. I mean, that's the only qualifier. That's the only thing we all have in common if you look at all the peoples of the planet. And I love the way the Dalai Lama, you know, talks about it. He says, you look at a mother's love for a child, and everybody has a mother, and everybody has become a child. And I think that maybe what needs to happen more is that we look at the commonalities instead of the differences, that we look at what everybody has in common, you know, and then we can get to that point. But I'll tell you, it's not easy. You know, it's not easy navigating on this planet. It must be. I think one of the reasons is because we have free will, and I think that the planet Earth was probably an experiment in free will, where other cultures, other cosmic cultures, other ET cultures have a collective consciousness where they do what's best for everybody. And I don't think that we go around on this planet doing what's best for everybody.
I call free will God's sense of humor. Watching people coming up.
If
we did what was best for everybody, we wouldn't be polluting, we wouldn't be cutting down trees, we wouldn't be doing a lot of things we do that are not good for everybody. You can't do just what's good for you, because if you do it, that's called free will, though. I mean, we have the choice, and I think maybe this planet is an experiment in free will.
I think of it as kind of a remote outpost out in the cosmos, but what do you think our role is here?
To grow up.
Well, I like being a kid, and I'm probably a lot older than you are.
To evolve, you know, to not be the same. I love being a kid too, but maybe that's part of it. You could be a kid, and then kids are very pure beings.
Yes,
they sure are.
The ultimate goal of life is to learn, and not only to learn knowledge, but to learn experiences and to learn to forgive and to learn to love. Because if we master to love each other, then we can have contact with the whole universe.
Well, you know, that's the basic Christian message. That was basically the message of Christ. He said love God, and he meant love love the forest, love nature, love everything that's out there, and then love your neighbor and as yourself. And that was it. That was the basic message. There was nothing else. You know, I think that encompasses every single solitary thing, whether you deal with a flower or whether you deal with a human being or whether you deal with a tree or whether you deal with society. And I think that people forgot that. And but again, we have free will. You could do what's good for you. And and that's what's so sad.
Yeah, and then there's also the teachings from the Galactics, because many people are telepathically connected to several species, and they give channeled messages. And if you read those messages, you really can learn a lot from them, their wisdom, their teachings, their way to love all life and to be connected to all life in the universe. And I should encourage people to read some of them. There's some of them are really good, like Sheldon Idle and Mike Quincy, the Syrians, the Pleiadians. They're really good messages, and that are educating us.
How about Mountain Horse? Are they good?
Well, some years ago, I have had some contact with the Syrians, and I have channeled some messages there on YouTube, even translated into Portuguese and Spanish and other languages.
I know they're good. I was just kidding you.
No, well, yeah. I think everybody has a role to play, but I if you ask, rather than get it from somebody else, I would encourage something that I have to do myself, and that is leave an hour a day to meditate.
Yes,
and then you'll get all that you need. But I am so busy. I am always at the computer. I run around like crazy, and I don't leave that hour. So if you leave the hour a day to meditate, so many wonderful things happen and your life changes and you can get all the messages you need.
Amen. I start the day out with a little podcast, which lasts about a minute. It's called Message from the Mountain. But what comes through is something that connects to nature and how it relates to life, hopefully in a positive way. And that gets me centered, just doing it and putting it together. And then it goes out to wherever it goes out. And with the belief that whenever anybody hears it at that time, it's what they should hear. And so that's, my intention for that. But also my meditation comes in brief moments, in little moments of things and thoughts, so that it adds up to that length of time. I just keep my line open all the time and kind of navigate through it on a kind of a holographic view, where I'm lots of times above, even though I can step in and do what I need to do, but I'm still looking at it from a observing life rather than getting totally wound up in it.
Yeah, because love is the most important, and being connected. I have those moments in the day between I'm doing things. I lay down on my bed and I get this wonderful connection and feeling that all life is one and we are all connected. And to feel this love is the ultimate goal, to feel this love and this connectedness, I think.
Well, actually, we're going right back to what we started from in the beginning of the hour, and that's what Edgar Mitchell felt when he was traveling to the moon.
Exactly.
That was what he felt, the oneness of being part of something beautiful and great, and looking at the stars and the earth and so forth. He had that feeling, and it's almost like leaving your body. It's almost like you don't feel like a person, you feel like a spirit. And that's how he interpreted it. And it changed his life, and it changed his whole entire direction.
Yes. Paula, you are so amazing, and I want to ask Michael if he has another question for you.
Yeah, my end of the show supposedly is ending. I have no idea that we got on live or not, but I'm sure Deb can get this from you anyways to post it if she needs to. From that standpoint, what do you think?
You can stay here until you can just stay connected to us on Skype, right?
Yeah, I can if that's all right. And
Revolution Radio we'll have another program at the top of the hour, but you can stay with us on the live stream on YouTube, finding voices.
Well, how long is the live stream on YouTube?
We have another half an hour.
We have another half an hour. Okay.
Is that good for you? Because we talked about the original hour, so.
Is that all right with you, Paula?
Another half an hour? Yeah, I could do another half hour. We're coming up on the hour, so are we going to be losing Michael?
I don't think so, because I think that you're stuck with me, because I'm not sure that the connection to Deb's worked or not. So, what do you think Edgar Mitchell's greatest contribution was to?
Well, you know, people aren't all spiritual, so they didn't understand that epiphany moment. That isn't, they didn't go there. But I when I met him, I did about six of Stephen Bassett's ex-conferences in Washington, D.C. And when I met him, he was at one of the ex-conferences. We were at the Washington D. Hilton or whatever, and we went to the Washington Press Club and after every conference. And Edgar, I was present when Edgar Mitchell was up in front of cameras from all over the world and asked the United States government to come clean on Roswell. He said, "I've been briefed. I know what really happened." Because, you know, the official news about Roswell is that the Air Force said it was crash test dummies and it was a Mogul weather balloon. It was a spy balloon. They have not admitted that there was a crash of a UFO in Roswell yet. And they will never formally admit it ever happened, even though we know from Don Schmidt and Tom Carey, they've talked to 99 witnesses and people that lived through that whole incident. So Edgar Mitchell thought that if he could do his best and as an astronaut ask that the United States government admit that it happened, that was his greatest, his greatest contribution, that he asked for disclosure. He asked for disclosure. He himself said that even though he hadn't experienced a UFO, his other astronaut friends had. And his astronaut buddies had told him what they saw in outer space. And so, you know, he's very credible. I mean, he was an engineer. He's a very credible person. And he put his reputation on the line to go to the conferences and speak about this.
Well, it certainly is that type of person with those credentials, in my mind, that helped bring this combination of science and hopefully the real truth out.
Yeah, if I had to name another one, I'm very close with the former Defense Minister of Canada, Paul Hellyer, and he was Defense Minister when McNamara was the Defense Minister under Kennedy, and I spent a lot of time with Paul. In fact, I gave the speech at his 90th birthday party in Canada. He invited me to come, and he said to me, "Paula, you said everybody's laughing at the fact that I'm involved with UFOs. I'd appreciate it if you said 5 minutes worth of something." And I thought about it because I wasn't prepared, and I just said to the people, I said, "You want to tell me what's funny when a French pilot in Air France has 300 people in the plane and sees a football-sized UFO over Paris? You want to tell me what's funny when you're sitting at Maelstrom Air Force Base and 10 missiles with nuclear warheads go down? Do you want to laugh at that?" I said, "You know, is that funny?" I said, "Paul Hellyer is basically a hero for saying that these incidents are real. And if you want to take it as a matter of national security, there's nothing funny about any of this."
No, and then you're talking about the case of Robert Salas, right?
Right, yeah. And that happened with Echo and Oscar flight. And I've interviewed Robert Salas. In fact, it's on my YouTube channel. I don't see, if you are having these missiles pointing at Russia in the 1960s, I think it was 1969, and Russia has a situation where they have activated, the UFOs activated the missiles. They turned on the sequence. You could have started a third world war. I want to see what's funny about that. You know, and people don't realize it's real. The phenomenon is real, and the beings didn't do anything. basically, you know, in Maelstrom, they went and fixed them, and they're back up within a week. So what that was a warning that we watch what kind of, you know, what we do with nuclear, putting nuclear warheads on the end of missiles and you know, doing away with whole entire countries. That's game over. It's over. We don't need to play anymore. And, I don't think any of that is funny. So when I gave that a speech at Paul's birthday party, nobody was laughing. I'll guarantee you people came up and they said to Paul, you know, we admire what you're doing because you're, you know, these people like a former defense minister and like Edgar Mitchell and like I also knew Monsignor Balducci of the Vatican. And a lot of these people, John Mack, Alan Hynek, all these people that are credible people, they're not crazy, came out and they give their testimonies. And they say, this is important. This we have to study. This means something. I admire them. They're the heroes. I'm just a reporter, but they're the heroes of all of this.
Why do you think that the real truth has not been allowed to come out?
Well, I think the real truth has to do with money. I think that when people find out that when these craft crashed and we have back engineered, now look at Roswell, it was 47, so that's over 60 years ago, that we have craft like that that is not using gas and oil, that I think that our whole economy is based on the petrodollar. And, everything that Stephen Greer says is absolutely true. I can verify even the people he mentions. Our economy is on the petrodollar, and they don't care about the ETs. It's not about ETs. It's about money. It's about the collapse of an entire economy. It's about, for a lot of people, it might be the collapse of their religion. It could be philosophy that they, you know, they can't. Some people decided they couldn't handle it. You know, the planet can't handle it. The planet would have to shift into a completely different mode. And I think it's going to, though, Michael. It has to. I mean, we got these technologies. We have zero point. We have them. And eventually, someday, we won't have enough fossil fuel stuff, so they'll come out. But it's on somebody else's timeline. It's not on ours. In other words, disclosure is on somebody's timeline that is not necessarily ours.
Do you think we're getting hints?
I think that I'm watching what's happening with NASA going to Mars. I'm watching what's happening with SpaceX, with Elon Musk and his. I'm looking at the privatization of space. I think that, you know, when going out into space isn't necessarily a governmental thing. I am looking at even, you know, like down in Roswell, they have the spaceport with Branson and Rutan. You know, Branson is Virgin Air, Virgin Records, Virgin Airlines. If you take civilians into outer space, what are you going to tell them when they see UFOs? If you can buy a ticket to you know, circumnavigate the whole planet, and you're seeing craft right there, what are you going to tell the people? You know, you can't not, you know, if we're traveling space, even if we do a circle around the Earth in about 30 years, and that's what Branson and Rutan want to do. They're making, and they Virgin Galactic is like airlines, only it's in outer space, and you have regular people there, and they're seeing UFOs, or the UFOs are coming up to them. You can't keep them quiet. I mean, you can keep military quiet, but you can't keep regular people quiet. You know, so I think that we got a lot of possibilities in the future. I don't think the ETs are going to do it because I think that would be the prime directive said do not interfere. But it's exciting. The future is going to be exciting for our kids.
So someone must be allowing these private companies to do the exploration and with the anticipation that perhaps this will come out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course. Of course. You can't control it. I mean, you can't really even control the ETs. I mean, if they want to appear over an airport, they're going to come.
Martin, I'm talking too much.
Is Martin still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. You're asking good questions, Michael. You're asking wonderful questions. Now, Paula, can you share with us what is your vision and your request for the world and the world government? What is your idea of the future of humankind in relationship to our ET friends and how they will interact with us, how they will make contact ultimately? Because my radio is called ET First Contact Radio. Now, this contact with the benevolent ETs is something that many people desire. Contact on a global scale. So how do you see this unraveling, and what are your greatest, deepest wishes for humankind to achieve?
Well, you first of all, that's a huge question. That's a loaded question. What a question. I can tell you, first of all, that I believe that the ETs have been communicating with the general public, and they don't care about the governments. I mean, what, you know, why would they care about the governments when they're curious? They're like anthropologists. They want to know how we live. They want to know what we think. They want to know how we express love. They want to know. And as far as benevolent or whatever, I think they're just ET. I don't put any label on them. They're just from somewhere else. And I think they're curious. And I think that for the longest time, they've been interacting with regular people. It's just that I got to get to the, as a journalist and as a researcher, I got to go to the people. I got to go, and I can't go to the people that it becomes about them, because what happens with contactees, then they become movie stars, it becomes about them, and I generally, I found out with a lot of the contactees, the ETs go home. They say the heck with you, and they go home. So they don't stay with these people. I've got to go with the, that's why I'm going to Latin America, because the Latin Americans not only have the biggest hearts, they're the purest as far as if they have ET contact, they really had it, and it's not about them. They have messages, or they've been told to do something, or they've had, and what I'm getting from Ricardo Gonzalez and Enrique Villanova and Sisto Paz Wells and Luis Fernando is that they want us to get together in groups and to meditate. And in the case of Luis Fernando, they say that if you go to the salt desert near Bolivia, they're also willing to activate a certain strand of your DNA so that you can evolve. And we have DNA, I think, that has some ET component in it. So what happens is that if you get into that space or you learn about this, you they can activate that so that you can, you know, receive more messages. It's an individual thing, Martin. It's not going to be the whole entire planet and the whole entire world. Even in my neighborhood, in my state, there aren't that many people that are interested in this. You know, they're just not interested.
That's why I hope for a disclosure announcement that they will start to educate us. But anyway, the South American people are amazing. The Queros and the ascended Incas, they live in the Andes Mountains high up there. And I'm in contact with Jeffrey Wiem. And he's coming this month to our country, to the Netherlands. And Jeffrey Wiem has published a film about the Apus, the mountains in Peru. And that's really amazing information. I will just show the DVD on camera, if I can find it. It's really something amazing what Jeffrey Wiem has accomplished by visiting the Incas in Peru, who live in the high mountains and who are the wisdom keepers. They are the wisdom keepers, and they have this information that will help humankind to evolve. Because, as you said,
but I really believe also that the Native Americans had it. The Lakota, Lakota Sioux, in their traditions, believe that their ancestors came from the Pleiades, the Seven Sisters. And that's why in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you have Devil's Tower, which is a sacred place, you know, because that was the bear that chased the Seven Sisters. Spielberg knew that. The Native Americans have had this tradition for a long time. I always say, if you want to know what happened on Earth, you got to go to the original people, the Aborigines in New Zealand, in Australia. the Native Americans in America, even in Africa, in different countries, and you'll find out what the real story was.
Exactly, and there's a beautiful legend I want to share about this Devil's Mountain, this dome. I don't know exactly where it is, but it was used in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. There's a legend in amongst the Native American tribes who lived around that mountain, and the legend goes like this. Once there were was a tribe of our brothers and sisters a long time ago, and there were seven girls playing in the forest. And then there was a huge grizzly bear running behind them, trying to eat them. So they fled to this plateau that was on the ground. It was a plateau of rock, circular. And they stepped on the plateau, and then the bear was trying to reach them, but then the plateau started to grow off the ground, and it grew higher and higher and higher. And the bear was trying to catch them with his claws. So he scratched the edges of the rock that was growing out of the ground, and it grew higher and higher. And the reason they speak about these claws is you see this half circular reliefs into the rock. And it grew higher and higher, and it actually grew beyond the earth, and it grew into the stars. And the seven sisters stayed on the rock in the stars and became the stars. They became the seven sisters, which we call the Pleiades. That's the legend in a nutshell.
Yeah, that's what I just was talking about, and who knew about that was Spielberg, because he's the one that did the movies, so he knew that.
Yes.
So he had, and since I worked with Alan Hynek, who is the consultant to that movie, there's a cameo of Alan coming out with his pipe in the movie that he comes out in where all the scientists are. I think that Spielberg knew that there had been a planned, a planned landing, that there has been a contact with scientists in planned places all over the world, whether it be the Amazon jungle, and there is a story that I learned about with in 1939 with people that came to the Amazon, and or whether it be Holloman Air Force Base with President Eisenhower, or other planned landings. I think that was part. I don't think that's science fiction. I think that's part of science fact. I think there's been attempts from people from the stars to meet with groups of scientists and politicians and so forth.
That's true. Michael, do you have a last question for Paula? Then I will ask the final question.
Well, I am just, first of all, I want to just say what a fascinating interview this is. And I just love your concepts, your thoughts. In your life, what was the tipping point in your life that brought you to really getting involved in this field?
Well, it was 1979, and I was teaching science fiction. I have a master's in education. I've been a high school English teacher for over 40 years, and I saw the movie Close Encounters, and at the very end, I saw François Truffaut, the director, the French director, play Jacques Vallée, and When he smiled at the being and he used his hand to, they used the tones to communicate, I started to cry. It was so moving. The contact was, the way it was done with that big, huge craft landing and Truffaut saying about the contactees, they were invited. Then I realized that film was an invitation to me. So then I started doing the work, the nuts and bolts work, and it was very nuts and bolts in those days. I mean, it was data gathering. It was getting, where the sightings were and the data of what was happening and everything in the early days. I didn't go to any kind of speculation as to what it was about. I didn't even think about the aliens. I thought about the craft. But that's what happened, Michael. I mean, I had an emotional reaction to that film. And I realized that it was all predestined, that I had to do the work. And so I just did the work, and I've been in it for 35 years now. And, Michael, you know what the worst part about it is? It's very difficult for a woman because it's a male-dominated field. I just saw a conference in California. There's 15 men and one woman in the poster. And I thought, whoa, you know, it's really hard for women to be, you know, researchers, you know, really good researchers in this field. Women are not considered.
Well, I think that's because you intimidate all these men, probably.
No, I don't think so.
Mike, I believe take it away.
It's changing. Yes. Go ahead, Michael.
No, I was going to say, just wonderful. I've really enjoyed this. And Martin, take it away.
All right. So I just want to say to my friend who is now on YouTube, watching this Success Sources BT, Nibiru is something I'll talk about in another interview with somebody who is more specialized in Nibiru, because that's another field of study, Success Sources. So we will cover that in another broadcast. Right now, Paula, I believe that the maze that you call the grid of lies and deceit from the mainstream media is falling apart, and I see a very positive message. This is for everybody, Michael, everybody who's listening. I believe we are reaching a tipping point of global change in a very positive direction. And of course, the effort that Paul Hynek did, Paul Heiler, Patricia Corey, Paula Harris, you know, Paula, you're so amazing. It's so positive what you're doing. And I want to go to South America with you and study the context that the Native
Americans Well, you're welcome have. To come. I'm going to Peru in May. I have to go and see the spots. I have to be there. And I'll tell you, Martin, and I'm going to say this publicly, I am one of the only three researchers that goes places. Most of the researchers in this field, what they do is they get it either off internet or they channel or they never move out of their houses. But I'm the one, and Timothy Good, Timothy Good is the other one, travel all over the world. And we do it on our own money. Nobody sponsors this research.
Yes.
So, you know, but I got to go. I mean, I can't just sit here and talk about Peru. I have to go there. I have to see what the people think. I have to see the places.
Yes.
And I don't speak Spanish. On top of it, I don't speak Spanish. So it's going to be very difficult. But I want to know. Yeah. I just really want to know.
I want to learn Spanish. I know a few words. People out there who see this screen, please donate to ET First Contact Radio. So I can travel to Peru with Paula, because I have a very small income. It's a benefit from the government. And I spend all my time doing this radio show, making appointments and agreements with people to interview. But Paula, I want to ask you for a last comment for the listeners before we sign off. Speak out your wishes for what we can do and what...
Well, I'll be a teacher. Let me do what a teacher does. Number one, if you want to know about UFOs, go to the source. That means you have to read a book. You want to know about Alan Hynek, you have to read his books. If you want to know about Adansky, read his books. Colonel Corso, you read his books. You do not listen to what other people say about him. You have to go to the source. Paul Hellyer, former defense minister, has written two books. One of them called The Light at the End of the Tunnel, a survival manual for mankind. Educate yourself and be a scholar about UFOs. Do not listen to other people. They don't know what they're talking about, a lot of them. It's opinion. And for me, research is not opinion. Research means you either go there, you ask the people, or you read the book about from the person themselves. You read the book. Jacques Vallée has written many books. You know, the people have, the original source will tell you the truth, and then you form an opinion. And I like to think of ufology in this field as an academic study. That means
it
you
is.
Get a degree in it. You get some kind of grade. Or that's why I teach online classes for Dr. Michael Sala, because I want people to read the books, and then they write an essay. So please educate yourselves and do not take the opinions of everything on internet.
Right. So let's study, my friends. Michael, it was amazing to do this together with you. You have asked amazing questions. It's a pleasure to broadcast on BBS Fighting Voices, Revolution Radio, and on YouTube. And I want to thank you both for being here.
Well, I'm going to visit Michael. It sounds like he's living in a gorgeous place.
You have an invitation just any time, because there's some pretty exciting things on the mountain taking place.
Well, I'll be there.
Great. Great. I'm looking forward to it.
So,
okay, thank you, Martin. Thank you for this interview.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Paula. Thank you, everybody listening out there. Know that there's good out there, that we are all connected through consciousness, where we spoke about, and through love, our essence, the heart, Paula. This is the key. Stay connected, and let's talk about love on the planet. I love you all, and I want to thank you all for being here. Namaste.
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 Much love. Next week, we'll have another live stream on YouTube. This Monday, David Boyle. David Boyle will be here on Monday with amazing news. Thank you, Michael. God bless.